Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Missing Frames. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge, here with the lovely Richie Pepio.
Wink, hello.
And the impeccably talented Alex Beard.
Double wink, hello.
And you are in for a treat today. I feel like I say that every episode. I think I'll probably say that for future episodes as well. I'm calling it now, but we are going to take a look at Wes Anderson's Rushmore. So, Alex... Has never seen Rushmore.
Never seen it.
Now, are you a Wes Anderson fan at all? Have you seen his movies?
I have. But I have.
Never seen. Which ones have you seen?
I have seen Darjeeling Limited.
Okay.
I have seen Life Aquatic.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen, what else is in there?
We've got Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Nope, I haven't
Royal
seen it.
Royal Tenenbaums.
Nope.
Never seen that. Wow. We got to add these to the list.
I know.
Sitting here. I'm living in a cave, guys.
So we got those. And then we've got Moonrise Kingdom. Have you seen that?
Nope.
Grand Budapest Hotel?
Yes. Okay. No, wait.
Oh,
nope. I haven't seen that
God.
One either.
All right. Well, we've got a lot of work to do. But
sorry,
way,
America.
I think this is a good one to start with. We've got Rushmore was Wes Anderson's second movie. He wrote it with Owen Wilson. He and Owen Wilson were like old school chums. He and the Wilson brothers, they all grew up together. I don't know if you guys knew that.
I knew that.
Richie knew that.
I was like, I knew that. Wilson.
Wilson Power. Wilson. The soccer ball.
Like
not the Wilson
Phillips.
Brothers. But they all were besties in high school. And it was something they'd actually written. It was not Wes Anderson's first movie. Bottle Rocket was his first movie, which he also wrote with Owen Wilson, I believe. But Rushmore predated it as far as script form went. But a couple fun facts about it. This is Jason Schwartz. I can't even say his name. Jason Schwartzman's first movie ever. And when he arrived for the audition, he actually wore like a school outfit like his character would. And he created a custom Rushmore pin that he wore. And I'm pretty sure that's what his impeccable pin making skills are what got him the part there. And then we also have Bill Murray. This is the start of his longtime collaboration with Wes Anderson.
This was Bill Murray's first movie, right?
This was Bill Murray's film debut as well.
Wow.
Had never acted in anything before, and you never guess it. But what's great about this is Bill Murray loved the script so much that he actually was like, I'll do it for free. And Bill Murray can be difficult to work with from what I've heard. I don't know. I don't speak personally. I've not worked with Bill Murray, though I'm not against the possibility. So he was basically in love with the script and told Wes Anderson that he'd do it for free. He actually did it for a small amount. I think it ended up being $9,000 total. So he totally, like, he and Wes Anderson were best buds, and he pretty much took him under his wing. And even there was this, I think there was a shot where they wanted to get, like, a helicopter in the shot, but the budget, it wasn't in the budget. So Bill Murray just wrote Wes Anderson a blank check and said, have at it and go get a helicopter.
Wow.
It's pretty great.
I
so
love
I love Bill Murray.
He's a beautiful man. But that's some cool stuff about that. And then we also have let's talk a little bit about now I've seen this movie before. Richie, you've seen it before as well, haven't you? So when did you see, you tell me, when did you see it?
I want to say I probably saw it during my, like, got to catch up and watch a lot of movies days in high school,
right?
Probably like 10th grade or something.
Okay.
And I really liked it. I liked it a lot. It was kind of my first taste of Wes Anderson's style, and I think he gets a little more, he develops his style over time. This is still kind of, this is very early Wes Anderson, so he's not as much like Wes Anderson as we know him.
Right. But it definitely, more so than Bottle Rocket, feels like it could have been made by anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are little touches that are Anderson, mm-hmm. but I feel like Rushmore is where he kind of found his identity
oh,
as
yeah.
a filmmaker.
Yeah, definitely. So you see where he's going.
Exactly.
And this has always been my favorite one. But I'll be honest, I haven't seen it in like 13
oh,
years.
Wow.
So I remember it so fondly that I, comparing it to his other ones, I'm like, this one, I like this more than his other movies.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen it in so long that I'll probably watch it again and be like, I don't know, maybe I don't like it as much.
Well, that's
we'll
perfect.
See.
I think anyone who says Rushmore is their favorite, I can't argue with, because it's so good and it's such a wonderful movie. It was not the first Wes Anderson movie I saw. I think I saw Life Aquatic first, which I loved. I know it's gotten like a mixed reaction from critics, but which I don't really understand. I guess
I loved
getting,
it too.
Yeah, I guess they were getting tired of like the smugness because Wes Anderson has a very distinct kind of smug.
And everybody
style.
Talks like this. So, Sean, boring.
Boring. I am emotionless and it's funny. But yeah, I think they were kind of over the irony thing. And then it kind of hit, like, the critics loved him. They kind of fell out of love with him. And then they kind of fell back in love with him, which was great. But I thought Life Aquatic was great. I think it's the least well-received of his movies. And then I think I saw, I don't remember which I saw next, but I'm pretty sure I bought Lost in Translation and Rushmore, and I watched them back to back. And I think I watched Lost in Translation first. So it was a Bill Murray double feature. And I remember thinking Lost in Translation was great, but it was such a emotional like experience. I don't know if I really want to watch another movie.
That's my favorite film.
Lost in Translation? Really? Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Have you seen Lost in Translation?
I've never seen it.
There you go.
Add it to the list.
But, add it there.
It's a fantastic movie. But I was like, I was planning to watch them back to back, and I was kind of like, oh, Lost in Translation was just such an emotional experience. I don't know if I can handle another movie. And I put on Rushmore, and it immediately... I was just like completely like, this is great, this is wonderful, and I loved it. That was probably my freshman year of college, and then, you know, I've seen it pretty frequently to this day. It's pretty fresh in my mind. But Alex, what is wrong with you? Why haven't you seen this before?
You know, I don't know.
Do you think it has anything to do with you being just a terrible, terrible person?
Probably. I think if I had to rank things, it's like me being a terrible person is probably like number one. Me being a hermit and never leaving my house, that's probably a close number two. Mm-hmm. And then for number three, it's probably just because, you know, realistically, Barbershop is not going to watch itself 50 times.
That's true.
No,
that's very,
true.
Very
it's true.
So. I'd also like to point out that today is Mr. Alex Beard's birthday on the day we're recording this. Not the day you're listening to this, you jerks. If you haven't said happy birthday to him already, you'd best get on it.
Happy
if you
birthday.
Haven't already, yeah. You're probably not a good friend anyway. No. You should probably just let
Die.
That one slide.
It's okay. I'll let it slide.
There
we
go. But are you looking forward to this at all, Alex? Do you have any level of anticipation or excitement for watching it, or how do you feel?
Yeah, I think I'm going to enjoy this. I have heard great things, and I like Wes Anderson, so I'm fingers crossed.
All right. And Richie, go ahead.
I'm going in with positive vibes.
Perfect. And Richie, are you, you were saying you're kind of hoping to like it as much, but...
Yeah, I hope to like it as much. I mean, if I don't, then I'll know that, hey, maybe I liked Darjeeling Limited more.
Okay.
We'll see.
Well, there we go. And then we'll figure that out. We're going to go watch it right now, and we will see how Rushmore fares.
Now available to own on video cassette.
And we are back. We are done watching Rushmore. So the big question on everyone's minds, Alex, what did you think of Rushmore?
Oh, I thought it was a Mount Rushmore. I'm sorry, guys. I'll leave. No, I loved it. I thought it was great.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Interesting film.
Yeah.
Very mm-hmm. dynamic. Mm-hmm. Also, though, not as stylistically... Wes Anderson as I would have expected.
No.
I was going to say the same thing. Watching it again, I was struck, you know, like I said before, Bottle Rocket feels like it could have really been directed by anyone. It doesn't really have that Wes Anderson flair or even like the intelligence of the humor.
Yeah.
Rushmore is almost like a place between his like really stylized stuff and then the kind of Bottle Rocket, where it's more grounded, where Max Fisher and then the plays and the way it's shot is very Wes Anderson, but it's not as, like, all the characters aren't as ironic.
Right.
Like Max Fisher is the only, like, Wes Anderson character in that movie.
It's a real world. It's a heightened world, but it's not that heightened compared to everything else. The heightening is coming from the characters themselves, not, like, the entire world is an alternate reality
exactly.
that's very artistically put
together.
Do you think
that the studio put him in that position, or he just hadn't found his creative vision?
I would say he hadn't found. He's still developing it.
Yeah,
because this is very much. You can tell this movie isn't something that necessarily. It's something that he wrote and took to them and was like, "Fund this," and they were probably like, "Okay, get a big star." And when he got Bill Murray, they were like, "Whatever." So
the studio doesn't seem like there's a ton of interference on their end. I feel like they would have cut it half an hour shorter.
Yeah, probably
studio. Yeah.
And like, definitely they had some money behind this. I mean, there were a lot of really expensive songs, I would assume.
The movie, definitely. Its budget was about $9 million.
That's
so,
yeah, I mean, really I cheap. Think,
yeah, that's cheap. It's, but also, I mean, if Bill Murray was paid $6,000.
Exactly. Yeah, he was paid relatively small. And he's great in this movie. I think mm-hmm. he's fantastic. And you can tell there are a lot of movies where you can absolutely tell Bill Murray is phoning it in. And I think this is one of his best performances in any movie. And I don't know. I can't think off the top of my head, but maybe I'm wrong. But I feel like this is the first movie he did that wasn't necessarily like straight comedy. Like, I mean, it is a comedy.
Yeah, definitely looking at IMDb, but it's the first one that I can remember that where he was doing... It's like the second half of his career started with this movie.
Exactly.
It feels like.
Yeah, exactly. He's doing something with a bit more depth that goes mm-hmm. beyond just like, oh, he's just kind of a wisecracking guy mm-hmm. with, you know, sort of a smart ass.
But that's great stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
That's always great when he does that.
It's
it's
not a bad
different.
Thing. Yeah, it's
right.
just, it's he is, this like you said, this kind of, just a few years later, he would be in Lost in Translation. Or what was that? That was 2003? So yeah, just about 5 years later, he would be in Lost in Translation, which I think might be... It's hard to say, you know, to say, oh, Bill Murray's best performance because, you know, Ghostbusters is great and all the comedies he's done is great. But like, Lost, yeah, Caddyshack, everything. Lost in Translation is just so good. And Rushmore, I'd loop right into it. And I probably put the two together.
It's probably just performance depth.
Yeah.
It's his best depth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
In comparison to his career.
I associate the two because I watched them back to back, but it was fun seeing those for the first time back to back to kind of mm-hmm. see him, a whole other side of him. But as far as the movie goes, so you've seen other Wes Anderson films and you notice that this isn't quite as stylized. Of the Wes Anderson films you've seen, how does Rushmore compare? Is there anything you thought he did, Wes Anderson did better than he did in his other movies that you've seen, or is there anything that struck you about this movie in particular?
So in regards to style, I mean, it definitely felt like he was like dipping his toes in it. Mm-hmm. Like, there were a lot of references to Jacques Cousteau.
Yeah.
Which like, I mean, that later comes in Life Aquatic.
Right.
Like, I think he's got a very interesting, I guess like some kind of, He's into it.
He likes it.
He's into
it. He likes those sea creatures.
And then also, like, there was, like, the typewriter and some of the fashion choices. So, I mean, he's definitely, like, stepping into it. But it didn't feel like, when I think of, and now I haven't seen the film, but when I think of Moonrise Kingdom, I think of, like, a filter that's, like, almost, like a sepia looking like oversaturated color.
Yeah,
pastels.
It's definitely Moonrise Kingdom is, I think it's funny. Rushmore was the last like not fully stylized Wes Anderson movie. Like everything from that point on is very stylized, very precise. Everyone speaks very ironically.
Just like dipping his toes into his own style. It's funny because as his movies progress, they more and more seem like the set dressing is making it try to look like a diorama. Like everything is just like a shoebox diorama you would see in a classroom. And this one, he just kind of steps into it by having the curtain open for each season.
Yeah.
And even just the plays themselves. The plays themselves, set-wise, look like the actual sets.
Exactly.
The real world, quote-unquote, of the future movies take place. And they take place in this almost, like, very manufactured, fake set.
Yeah, everything. It's almost... I feel like he did that for these three movies. Rushmore, Royal Tenenbaums, and Life Aquatic in particular. Mm. Where Rushmore is the play. Like you said, the curtains are a recurring motif and everything is kind of staged like a play. Mm-hmm. Royal Tenenbaums, it's a storybook. It's even like there's a storybook being read to by a narrator throughout the movie. And then Life Aquatic is almost like an aquarium where everything is like involved in that. And he doesn't really like after Life Aquatic, he kind of abandons that and sort of just embraces all of these things he's been working on through the years. But so what did you think of... So this is Jason Schwartzman's first movie.
Yeah.
And Jason Schwartzman is a guy I kind of have a love-hate relationship with. I think he can be fantastic or he can be kind of annoying. I think when he is too aware of his shtick, he becomes really obnoxious. But most of the time, I really love... This makes it sound like I don't like him. I actually really like him a lot. And I really, really love him in Rushmore. I think it's insane that this is his first movie
yeah,
and that
crazy.
He was like discovered for this. But what did you think?
He does come from acting royalty, though.
He does, the Coppolas.
He's Shire's son, right?
Yeah, he's yeah, I think so.
Right.
I mean, I know he's
so
Sophia,
it's in the family.
Yeah, he's Sofia Coppola's cousin, and she kind of got him sort of in the room for the audition with this. But what did you think of him? This is his first performance.
Yeah, I thought he was great. Very dynamic performance, very interesting. Especially, I don't know, when people play teenagers, they often overdo it with like angst, and there was like a lot of depth to his role and his character. Like, I mean, he definitely had emotional instability, and like I really thought the character choices were well done, especially just in terms of how the script was written. He played it well. I mean, he was like a quirky kid, but also like owned everything that he did.
It's true.
Like nothing was like winking into the camera.
Right.
Like everything was like, no, this is who he is as a person.
Yeah, it's funny because we talk a lot about the irony of Wes Anderson. And even though Max Fisher as a character is very stylized, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of irony to it.
Not at all. I mean, and I love how that's played because as soon as you wink at the audience and you let them in, it's over. It's over.
He's fully committed.
His performance rings true.
Yeah.
It totally rings true.
Yeah.
He's played as this unique, weird kid who's over-involved. And it stands out to the other characters in the movie that he is kind of a very unique character.
And those
but
kids,
I've seen them. I know that kid.
Yeah,
we've been
exist,
friends
is,
with those
yes,
kids.
Yes, exactly. Yep. Yeah, that kid definitely exists.
Yes.
That kid has gotten punched a number of times. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm advocating for that.
Nobody has.
But he has. I'm sorry.
He's probably deserved it.
Yeah.
So Owen Wilson and Wes Anderson have a working relationship. Owen Wilson doesn't appear in this movie. He appears in a lot of Wes Anderson's movies. But Luke Wilson appears in this movie.
Very small performance,
very small,
though.
And he was the star of Bottle Rocket. He was the main character, and he's a very small part in this movie. But maybe he's involved in one of the funniest scenes, I think, of the entire movie, which is when they all go to dinner together after Max's play. Luke Wilson's character comes along in his O.R. scrubs. Oh, are they? I was wondering if that scene stands out to me. I absolutely love it. Is there any scene in this movie that you guys really like? When you think of Rush Hour, I know, Richie, you hadn't seen it in a while.
Yeah.
Was there a particular scene that you always remembered, like you were looking forward to?
You know what? There's a scene. Well, there's one little line. First of all, I'll just say the Vietnam play at the end was fantastic. I totally forgot the details.
I think
that
was my favorite
part. That was probably my favorite part, too. And just everybody's reaction, like the audience's reaction. Bill Murray, obviously, he's a vet, so he was very emotionally moved by it. And then Max and what's his new girlfriend's name at the end?
Margaret Yang.
Margaret's interaction at the end, where they both draw guns on each other, but then they're in love.
They're in love.
That's brilliant.
Which is perfect.
That's brilliant.
And then the joke that I thought was very funny to me was I'm bad with names. The Scottish guy.
Oh, I can't remember his name either.
this makes me sound really terrible.
The not Ewan McGregor, but
not
he kind of looks like Ewan McGregor.
Looks like Ewan McGregor.
Yeah, he's like bully Ewan McGregor.
Bully Ewan McGregor when he goes up to Dirk and says that Max was just his partner because he wanted to get with his mom and get a hand from his mom. So then they cut to later when Dirk has the letter that said they were both giving each other hand. Which is just very funny because in my head I'm like, he's such a young kid, does he know what a hand is?
Yeah.
And then the payoff, it's just like a slight would an audience member even always think that?
Yes.
But then they address it slightly with just a little reference in the letter.
that was great.
Well, it's funny because it shows the innocence of these characters giving each other hand is like, oh, that's how adults bond with
each other. Really love the tongue-in-cheek joke of his father being a neurosurgeon.
Yes.
Even though he's a barber.
Right.
Like that, that's like, that's dad joke.
Oh, are you a nurse?
Yeah. Well, it's great.
I'm wearing my OR scrubs. Oh, are they?
Yeah, I love, I do love that. And it also, it's a really, what I love about Wes Anderson's movies and why I never understood were even, Life Aquatic, where people were like, oh, it's too ironic, is all his movies, no matter how like quirky and weird and maybe some would say obnoxious they get, there's always genuine emotion going through it. And, you know, Rushmore is no exception. But I love that, you know, there's a great moment where, you know, Max is embarrassed of his father. Like, oh, he's a neurosurgeon, and he never admits that he's a barber. But when Bill Murray's character finally meets Max's father and he's like, this is my dad. And Herman Bloom, the character Bill Murray is playing, is very moved and is like, oh, it's very nice to meet you. It's like little moments like that, I feel like, are what make Wes Anderson's movies so great.
Yeah. And they're also just like the little touches of absurdism.
Yeah.
Like when Bill Murray's leaning on the tree and he grabs the branch yes. and then it zooms out and the tree falls.
I remember the first time I saw this movie, I was already into it. But I think the moment where I realized I really was like, OK, I'm totally sold and I'm into this. Is when he's in the car and he's talking to his kid. It's early in the movie and he's Herman Bloom is talking to his kids about, like, why didn't you invite Max? And they're like, come on, Dad, they're gonna be girls at our party. And he reaches back and grabs the kid and it just
that's
cuts
it. They
to
don't need
scene.
Anything
that's
else.
I thought that was so funny. We're gonna take a moment here, everybody, to give a shout out to something very special. Now, who doesn't like discounted stuff? I mean, I know I sure do. So let's take a moment to talk about Loot Crate. I mean, if you are on a quest for epic gear, housewares, collectibles, they offer an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. If you want to be super cool and get really fancy, you can get a bigger box with even bigger loot with Loot Crate DX. Now, for the month of November, we've got something really special for you. So we have a 100% exclusive crate featuring items from Doctor Strange, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, Big Trouble in Little China, all kinds of wonderful magic stuff. Now, you have until November 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific time to subscribe and receive that month's crate. And when the cutoff happens, you're done. You are no longer eligible for this. So all you have to do is go to www.lootcrate.com/nerdparty. That's NERDPARTY. And enter our code nerdparty, all one word, at the checkout, and you will save on your subscription. Not too shabby. So there you go. Check it out. Alex, was there a scene that you can think of where you were kind of like, okay, like early on, did the movie grab you or did it kind of win you over gradually?
I would say it was a gradual. Uh-huh. I think it was a gradual win. Like, because there were a couple things early on that I was like, oh, I don't know. I just didn't necessarily believe it. Like, uh-huh. a good example, and maybe it's just the children that I have witnessed talking and bragging about mm-hmm. girls. But basically, like, when he was sitting with Dirk's mom in the car, and right. then he's like, oh, I got a handshake. Like, that didn't have the joke payoff that I right. was really hoping mm-hmm. it would. Like, either other kids ragging on him for the fact that he's bragging about a handshake,
right.
or, like, them being like, living in this world of, like, oh, handshake? Yeah. Oh, my right. gosh. Like, so there were little things like that where I was like, oh, man, like, kids in real life would react bigger than what they gave.
Okay. So it was a little, it kind of took sense. A little bit to find its
yes.
balance.
Yeah. But with that said, like, that fits all of those characters because there are, truthfully, even though there are over-the-top absurd moments like the Vietnam play and the tree falling, mm-hmm. truthfully, a lot of it is very grounded.
Right. Another thing I want to talk about is Wes Anderson's use of music, which I think as far as modern filmmaking goes, and maybe even all filmmaking, at least the films I've seen, I think Wes Anderson and Quentin Tarantino have a better mm. handle on how to include pop music in their films than maybe any other film director. And I think, the music and choice or the music choices in this and all his movies are so inspired. I'm wondering if you guys have a particular favorite music moment in this movie. I almost feel like I know what you're gonna say, Richie, but go ahead.
It was gonna be the Who.
Yeah,
play it. I love that too. For some reason the Oyoko
struck
me. Because Oyoko. Because it's such a specific song.
Also, that
and
song
it's
is
a,
so rarely used.
I never hear it.
I barely ever hear it.
This is the first time I've ever heard it, that song. Yeah, it's not a big John Lennon song. And it's also, it doesn't fit exactly with what was going on, but it works.
It's
the feel of it, which is great. I think that's kind of what Wes Anderson's movies have kind of excelled in, where the plot doesn't necessarily, you're always involved with it, but the plot it's almost more about the feel of it. Like, yeah. It's not really about, like, oh, this line makes sense or this character makes sense, but how everything sort of feels.
Well, and also his later movies are very a lot more specific about the song choices, too. This one was a little across the board. It stuck to kind of like a like late 60s, early 70s time period.
It also felt a little like Zach Braff-ish, like for Garden State, where it's like, this is the playlist that I've been listening to for the past 6 months while writing this script.
Right, right. Steve Zissou is like all David Bowie, right?
Yeah, it's all covers of David Bowie songs done by, I'm going to butcher his name, it's Seu Jorge.
Okay.
He performs all the songs, and they're all amazing renditions. But then I know Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo, I think.
From Devo, and he does the score of Rugrats and a lot of TV shows. Yeah.
He did the score for Rushmore, and I believe Royal Tenenbaums as well, but he does Life Aquatic, so it's got this very kind of electronic-y vibe to it. But
and then the ukuleles that they the song that might be a Django Reinhardt song, although again I should have done my research beforehand, but at the end of the dance before they switch it, he switches it to the other record, that like song just reminds me of the quintessential feeling of Wes Anderson movie.
Right.
Also too, like watching that film, all I could think of was this is something that Vampire Weekend watched a lot.
Oh, totally.
When writing music.
Yeah, and
like it feels like their music sounds. Mm-hmm. Like if they were reversed, Vampire Weekend would have been in this movie.
Oh, I'm sure. And Oxford, I think the music video for Oxford, comma, if you watch that, it's like if Wes Anderson didn't direct that music video, like he should sue them, because it's basically it's designed like a Wes Anderson movie. But it's very clear, it's, you know, that kind of tweed, quirky style that Wes Anderson, you know, he got from like Mike Nichols with The Graduate and then other like French filmmakers. But it's a very specific style that he kind of owned. Bringing it back to the music choices, I know originally Wes Anderson said he'd wanted to go with like 60s like British kind of punk rebel rock, like he was like, I wanted to make the whole soundtrack like the Kinks and the Who, but it kind of turned, he was like, I couldn't get the rights for it. I don't remember if he couldn't get the rights for it.
He got one Who song,
and I don't even know, I think there's one Kinks song in it too, but he ended up kind of going a little bit more, a wider spectrum of music. All right, well, how does this, Richie, so, you know, you've seen it before, it's been a while, did it hold up?
Actually, I liked a lot more.
Oh, great.
And I still think it's my favorite. I thought emotionally it was my favorite just from my memory of it. Like,
yes.
I remember liking this the most when I watched it comparatively to when I watched the other ones.
Right.
And this is still my favorite one.
That's great.
Compared to the other
ones I've seen. It's always nice to watch a movie that you haven't seen in a while and are afraid you might not like
it's
and have
funnier
it still
than
hold
remember,
up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funnier than I remembered it. I was kind of, like you said with Alex earlier, like it was a gradual, for me watching it the first time, it was like, got into it. I kind of got it later. I was into it from the beginning watching it again. I loved it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I still, I mean, I guess I haven't watched his films on repeat enough. Like, I need to go back and watch Life Aquatic again to know if that feeling changes. Like, if it's a slow build. Because I remember distinctly that was also a slow build for me.
Right.
Yeah.
This feels a little, for me now, having watched it again, it feels like less of a slow build. It probably made me laugh the most out loud comparatively to his other ones. They're a little too, some of them are a little too dry.
Yeah.
Not in a bad way, but just as far as my garnering entertainment from it.
Rushmore definitely leans more comedic. Royal Tenenbaums feels almost a little melodramatic. Like it's someone reading a book of poetry in the corner who's like, nobody understands me. I kind of love that, but at the same time,
it depends on your mood.
Right.
You know?
When I watch Royal Tenenbaums now, which for a while I probably would have said was my favorite Wes Anderson film, you kind of watch it and you feel like Alex, that I think that whole Vampire Weekend example is the perfect thing, where I will watch that and it's kind of like the way I feel when I watch a Tim Burton movie, when it's like, oh, this is like Hot Topic galore, like people love Hot Topic, will love Tim Burton.
Right.
Royal Tenenbaums kind of feels like
he
went a little too far.
If you
in
like
that
Anthropology
direction.
He drank too much of his own Kool-Aid.
Anthropology. Yes, exactly. So I still love Royal Tenenbaums. I love all his movies, but I feel like Rushmore was almost I don't want to ever call Wes Anderson pretentious, because his movies are too funny and too knowing to be pretentious. But Rushmore was kind of like pre-pretentious. Like he kind of, with Royal Tenenbaums, Life Aquatic, and Darjeeling Limited, I think he kind of went a little too far. He kind of recovers a bit. Fantastic Mr. Fox is great, and then I thought Moonrise Kingdom was amazing, and I think Grand Budapest Hotel is amazing. But
he builds these worlds in these later movies that he does. So here you get the idea of Rushmore, how Rushmore is set up in comparison to the other, like the outside public school world. Yes. But like with this movie, Rushmore is a little more focused. It's a little bit more centered around a smaller group of characters, a singular story. And I think in the long run for Wes Anderson's type of storytelling, I prefer that to his later stuff.
Did Wes Anderson go to like a private boys institute?
I think he did. I don't know 100%. I know Owen Wilson did. I think they all went to school together. And I know Owen Wilson got kicked out and expelled and went to public school. So it's very stylized. And he was also in love with one of his teachers, too. So I think a lot of that went into this movie.
What's funny about it is, so the headmaster, he is, you know, basically putting him up on the wall and basically saying, oh, you're going to be expelled if you don't get your grades up. And what's funny is what he's doing that are hurting his grades is everything that every headmaster or principal would want their students to do now, which is, you know, be in as many extracurricular activities as humanly possible. Yeah. And he's like a relatively good kid. Like, he's not starting fights or saying terrible things to other students. But yet he has this like almost Dennis the Menace type relationship with his headmaster.
Yeah.
Which I like the stroke scene. That is so funny in the hospital where the first thing he says, just groaning and like opening up his eyes.
What do you want?
Yeah.
I just love when his wife's like, oh, he's like, does he know who I am? And she goes, I don't think so. And he goes, it's Fisher. And then just cuts to the next scene.
He hasn't spoken in 10 days.
And it's funny because like that kid is the pain in the butt because he always is asking to start a new club or whatever. Not because he's getting into fights or being a bad student. It's just like, nope, he's just annoying.
he's just the annoying
kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alex, as far as your ranking goes with the movies, with Wes Anderson's movies. So, Richie, it's still your favorite, Wes Anderson. Alex, how does it compare with the other ones? And which ones have you seen again?
So, I've seen Life Aquatic, Darjeeling Limited.
Okay.
And that's it.
That's it? Yep. So how does this compare, do you think, to those two?
So I really honestly need to go back and watch them. I probably haven't watched them since they've come out, honestly. Mm-hmm. I just, from nostalgia and thinking about it, I think I enjoyed Life Aquatic more. Mm-hmm. But I also like have a weird thing for Jacques Cousteau as well.
It's very cool. I love Life Aquatic. I think it's great. Yeah. I think anyone who doesn't like it should die.
I actually agree with you, Sean. but I think this film probably could have done with like 20 minutes more of editing.
It's a short movie.
I know.
It's like 91 minutes.
I don't know if it's
really
editing.
It is. Because
it feels longer.
I would say like the last 15 minutes, it felt like it dragged a little bit.
And I think it's because the script loops back on itself again. Yes. Mm-hmm. Like they play the same storyline out twice, essentially, where people are together and happy, and then they're apart and sad, and then they're together and happy again.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that like is very traditional and almost overplayed.
Gotcha.
So that was, I guess that's where I get that feeling from. So maybe it just needed a different, you know, storyline or very minor change. But yeah, no, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think if I had to give it a score, what do we want to score
We'll say how many punctuality awards will you give Rushmore?
Out of how many?
Out of five. Five being the highest, the most punctual.
I'll give it 4.5.
Okay. Alex?
I think I would give it a solid 4.
Okay. I'd give it a 5 just because I love this movie so much.
Man. If you're going to give it a 5.
You're punctual.
4.75.
4.82.
You're punctual, Sean.
And I'm super punctual. I really love Rushmore a lot. It's tough. It's a tough call. I think I know what my favorite Wes Anderson movie is, and then I watch another one, and I'm like, oh, that's my favorite. Rushmore is probably his best movie, I think. I think Moonrise Kingdom is probably my favorite, and maybe Royal Tenenbaums, but I think Rushmore is about as perfect as a film as he's ever made, and one of my very, very favorites. But
what was the short film that he did? Hotel.
Hotel. I was going to say
Hotel,
Rwanda.
Hotel Rwanda. Hotel Rwanda.
A Wes Anderson film.
Oh, that was.
That would have been great. It was a Hotel
Chevalier.
Chevalier. Chevalier. Chevalier. Hotel. Hotel Chevrolet.
I saw that.
Chevalier.
Yeah. I saw that.
That's a prelude to Darjeeling Limited.
Yes.
It's definitely, you should definitely see that before Darjeeling Limited. It definitely helps. Yeah. But all right. Well, there you go. That's Rushmore in a nutshell. We all enjoyed ourselves, so it lived up to expectations. And guys, where can people reach us if they want to talk to us on social media, if they want to yell at you? Where can they reach you on the Twitter, Richie?
The Twitter is Richie Pepio, at Richie Pepio, RichiePepio.
There you go.
They can find me, Alex Beard, at Mr. Alex Beard.
And that's fantastic.
Simple.
And mine is not my first and last name. It's at Yay Sean Dorman. So mine is not as easy to find. But go ahead and search for us. What did you think of Rushmore? Do you love it? Is Wes Anderson overrated? Would you rank it highly in his movies? Or are you just a terrible human being? Anyway, I think that's a wrap for this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, woo. So, gentlemen, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for watching the movie.
And we will see you next time, everybody. Have a good one.